You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
Now we leave the floor to the first intervention, the last one I quoted, and the good example from the Kerala state in India is up to you, Mrs. Ananya, to take the floor.
First of all, thank you for having me here. Because we have very little time, I'm not going to just read my paper. If you're interested, you can take a look at it. What I'm going to try to do is to put this case in light of some of the theoretical discussions we had in the morning and also give you some of the background as to why this might be an important case for us to consider in the social and solidarity economy discussions. I can forewarn you, if I sound a bit too optimistic or a bit too inspired by the case, this inspiration and the optimism actually comes from the women themselves. Every time I go, I meet new women, they talk about the insurmountable challenges they have overcome and how, and they seem to be ready to take on even more challenges. So this is why it is impossible not to be inspired by that experience. So before we go there, before we give you the brief introduction to Kerala, I wanted to talk very briefly about why is this case important? The case is important for a number of reasons. One is it demonstrates structures of solidarity at all three levels. In the morning, Professor Koragia was talking about micro, meso, and systemic systemic levels of solidarity. One is internal, the other is solidaristic networks, and the third one is a systemic kind of approach to solidarity. We see very good beginnings of all three levels in this movement. The second reason why I think this is a very important case for us is it is not simply trying to build new economic organizations like an enterprise here and an enterprise there, but it is really trying to create an alternative social, political, and economic space which transforms social relations, particularly as perceived from the vantage point of women. And in this way, women are not only participants in a program or a project, but women are actually the articulators of alternative visions of justice. And I think this is extremely important for the social and solidarity economy discourse. What makes it really different is not simply the nature of the enterprise, but the normative underpinnings. What kind of visions of justice do we bring to this movement? And the final reason is, again, very important. Professor Koragia mentioned this point that the movements that we see in Latin America are trying to transcend the European welfarist paradigm. That is, there is a distributive state, and the distributive state delivers social services and welfare as necessary and as negotiated by different social forces. This tries to build the delivery of social service and delivery of, or the creation of, a better life from the production relations itself, from the normative view and the production relations itself. So we are not simply trying to grapple with the symptoms or the distributive malaise after production, but we are trying to reconstitute a set of production relations based on an alternative vision of justice. And at the center of all of this, of course, this is a women's movement, so at the center of all of this is the changing of social relations from a gender perspective. Okay, let me try my technical skills. So I want to just give you a brief introduction to Kerala, which many of you would know because it is very well known for its human development credentials. So it has a consistently higher human development achievements with respect to India, but certainly with respect to a lot of other developing countries. And in India, consistently for a number of years, beginning from 2001 and even earlier, it ranks number one amongst all of the Indian states. However, The other part of the story is, even though the human development indicators suggest some very strong improvements for women in terms of literacy, in terms of the sex ratio, it is the only Indian state which has a sex ratio positive towards women. In terms of work participation, not so much. It still remains a deeply patriarchal society where participation in social, political, and economic realms is governed by patriarchal norms. And to some of you, this might sound contradictory because Kerala is always touted as a matrilineal state. There are some traditions of matriarchal relations or matrilineal relations, but that does not quite translate into gender equity as we understand now. So what happened in Kerala is, apart from this human development indicators, Kerala also has a very distinctive history within India as a place where there has been decentralization of planning. Levels of decentralization of planning exist in different parts of India, but Kerala has been quite the leader in this, in particular because the budget, the state budget, about 35 to 40% of the state budget is devolved to local governments. And it is not quite an alternative participatory budgeting as we see in some parts of Brazil, but there is some kind of citizen participation in the delivery of this alternative budgetary system. And built in this is also a goal, or several goals, of why this kind of alternative citizen-led budgeting, or what they call the People's Campaign for Decentralized Planning, had to be launched. It was because in state-level planning, or in ordinary processes of planning, there were endemic exclusions, because people are not really included in processes of planning, certainly not women, certainly not in India. We have the caste hierarchy, people of lower caste, minorities, and so on. So this was one way of tackling some of the endemic exclusions. And this history of emphasis on high human development and emphasis on a people's campaign, a decentralization of planning, is both an outcome of and a creator of a different kind of agency in Kerala. And one of the most important aspects of this agency is the collective aspect. I have this vision of Kerala that if you walk through half a kilometer on any street in Kerala, you will see a union, an association, some kind of local neighborhood group, some kind of organization. It's a society that is really heavily invested in organizations. Now, of course, that does not necessarily mean that they're all non-exclusionary, but there's a very strong social investment in the understanding of the collective. The second thing is the decentralization itself, which has opened up spaces for agents at the local level. Again, not as much as one would want, but certainly in some ways through the local governance mechanisms and through the local structures of administration, there has been quite a bit of opening up for of agents at the local level. One of the very important developments for women have been that in beginning 2011, Kerala has become one of the three states in India where 50% of the seats in the local bodies are reserved for women. And this has created, apart from getting women elected in offices, this has created a tremendous encouragement, inspiration amongst women, and the particular movement which I'm going to talk about, Kudumbashi, there 6,000 plus women ran for office, of which about 5,000 have won and they are in office. And that has really made very important changes at many different levels. So this is just a picture of their annual general meeting, which has anywhere between 10 to 50,000 women, depending on where it's being held. And the reason, again, going back to why this is an important case for us, is to give you... How much time do I have?
Seven.
The scale. So this is a movement, which is why we need to understand as a movement and just a case. This now has anywhere between 3.7 to 4 million women who are members of the movement. There are 46,000 plus group enterprises in agriculture alone, which has about 250,000 women active in agricultural groups, plowing about 10 million hectares of land. And they have, across other sectors, about 12,000 other enterprises, which are all, and this is a very important point for us to note, which are all group enterprises. And they are not individually owned micro-enterprises. There's a huge number of those also. But the focus, I'm focusing here on group enterprises only because of their natural affinity to the social and solidarity network framework. So this is the scale at which the movement currently operates. And then the important thing for us to understand what it really is, and it's actually not at all a straightforward question. In one way, it has two very linked facets. On the one hand, it is a government program. I'll come to that in a minute. On another way, it is a community program. I'll come to that in a minute. But what it is most importantly is that it is a space. It is really a social space where millions of women who are doubly, triply marginalized as women, as workers, as members of the low caste, as members of indigenous communities, and members of religious minorities. So there are multiple layers of marginalization and exclusion which this movement provides a space for the women to address in different ways. They have different solutions for different exclusions. But this has really become a space to articulate these multiple exclusions and marginalizations. It has, technically speaking, a twofold structure. And this is very important to note in terms of what we saw in the morning, Professor Coraggio laid out as the meso and systemic network. Right? So it has one part of it is the social movement where the women are engaged. And here, the structures of solidarity are very meticulously organized. So the social movement has three different layers. I'll come to that in a minute. And also, there is a government agency with the same name, which is the state government's poverty eradication program. So depending on how you look at it, you could see it simply as a government program, or you could see it simply as a social movement. But it is neither of those ones in isolation. It's really the interlinking and the systematic interlinking of the two that make this movement so different. So as the government agency, it is the official anti-poverty program. But it is different in the way that it is not looking only for individual poverty eradication, but it is looking to establish an alternative development model with the leadership of poor women themselves and built through articulations from below. So I'll come to that in a minute. So women are organized in different groups and entrenched in different aspects of the local government, so their articulations of the alternatives are systematically injected into the local planning mechanism. The statewide women's movement is its most visible phase, and if you talk to the women, they see themselves as a movement. To them, the government agency exists to serve the needs of the movement. And so it is organized independently of the state, and it was made with the distinct goal of having a continuous and systematic community voice in government planning, which without the community voice would become male-dominated and top-down. And it has a three-tiered structure. The social movement has a three-tiered structure. It consists of neighborhood groups, which exist in every neighborhood, 10 to 20 to 40 women, up to 20 women usually, get together in a neighborhood. There are 200,000 of those neighborhood groups. Then neighborhood groups are groups and officials from neighborhood groups are elected to form a second-tier organization. There are 16,000 or more of those. And those then further elect bodies to constitute what are called community development societies. And there are 1,000-plus of those. Now, these community development societies work with the local planning bodies to develop the local plans. And the community development societies are actually the prime developers of the local plans. That does not mean all of the plans get executed, but the plans are generated by the community development societies through the meetings of area development societies and neighborhood groups. And imagine this happens across every district of Kerala, across 4 million or so women. So it's a way to get their voices in. What do they do that is different is they are now, through the group enterprise framework, their project is to promote collective, this is 1.5?
Yeah.
I have 1.5 minutes left. Going beyond microfinance and to see how networks of solidarity and collectives of excellence can give women ways to share risk, assets, costs, etc. And they then want to scale up to new sectors, which is going totally beyond household production, into textile, handicrafts, etc. And this is also very important from our discussion in the morning, they are trying to develop alternative marketing networks, which are not only alternative networks, but they want to challenge the way in which markets function. That is, the main goal of that is to connect producers to markets without intermediaries, and even when they are intermediaries, the intermediaries are the women belonging to the same communities. The idea is to have a different local economic development model where producers, consumers, intermediaries, service providers are all working together. Now, I won't have time to go into what is in the paper, and that is, you can look at how the food services and public sector work is developed by women. But let me just conclude by naming the three gains from solidarity, which comes from the solidarity structure. One is, of course, the inclusion. And anywhere you go, the first thing that women will tell you, all women who are excluded or not, that the best part of this is the systematic inclusion that they can generate. The second one that has happened in a fairly large scale, particularly through the food security, food sovereignty movement, is that vulnerable wage laborers have been able to transform themselves into independent producers, and they operate in groups, which then adds another layer to their security. The final thing, which again I've laid out in the paper, in terms of delivery of social needs, is they have really rethought what food security means. Food security does not mean for the hungry to have food, but it means people to have control over the production and distribution of food. And that is what their food security movement through the solidaristic networks are trying to establish. Not simply receiving food, but being able to control the parameters of production of food. I will end right now, half a second. And this has also been very strongly linked with what is very well known as India's largest public works program in the recent decades, the NREGA. And Kerala has had the most important success from the perspective of women in the NREGA. 93% of the NREGA workforce is women. That has negative and positive aspects. But the connection, what they call the convergence of infusing women in this large scale in the NREGA movement and the food security movement together has had very important effects on women's role or the solidarity of women and its role in transforming social relations.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unrhys.org. Thank you for listening.